There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, put your mittens on your kittens, and away we go. Midday Mobile on this Thursday, Friday Eve, Little Friday, however you want to refer to it. And it's I see some blue skies out there in the mix. Not bad. Of course, Dr. Bill has not so great weekend weather for us. But, hey, we'll enjoy today and tomorrow and get to that later. Coming up today on Midday Mobile, Justin Bogey, 1819news.com, joins me about 12:35. We'll get to that. And then, like I said yesterday, because of basketball, and this goes on through basketball season, you've got Auburn basketball will be like on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night or a Saturday. Things move around, and if you're new to the station, this happens for like a month or so, a month and a half, then we get back to normal. So what's working with Cam Marston, that's usually 6 o'clock on Wednesday nights, is 1 o'clock on Thursdays today. So we'll be going to Cam's show coming up in just a little bit here on our broadcast day, and then the Paul Feinbaum show. All right, a text line, phone line open for you at 251-343-0106. Reminder, too, if you have the FM Talk 106.5 app, in addition to being able to call us from there or text us from there, you can also leave us one of those talkback messages where you can record something, emails it to the station, we can play it back on the air. So another reason to download the FM Talk 106.5 app. Let's get started here. A lot of discussion going on. Well, we've discussed this over time, you know, this annexation story over time. I think Dale Leish and I, from Lanyap, he and I probably logged 6 continuous hours of discussion of annexation. I know they were talking about it a good bit this morning on Mobile Mornings. It's one of our 3 big things, the top news stories of the day, which, by the way, just as we're doing some housekeeping here, if you ever hear us talking about 3 big things or those stories, they're up all day long over at fmtalk1065.com. They're the right there below the fold, I guess they call it. They used to in the newspaper business. Scroll down, you'll see the 3 big things, and you can check them out. So, latest update here from Lanyap, and Dale Leish has written the story. City releases annexation study area maps. It says, with annexation, the city of Mobile would grow its revenue, become the second largest city in the state, although they're arguing now it might be the first, and proactively prevent the loss of approximately $20 million to its budget from areas of the police jurisdiction that could become their own cities. That from officials with Mayor Sandy Stimson's office confirming yesterday during a presentation to the media for 4 study group maps. While the maps of various annexation scenarios each show a growth in the city's population above 200,000, they also indicate a slight decrease in the municipality's black population. The 4 maps made public for the first time yesterday will be sent to PFM Financial Services for a 6-week study before being placed on Mobile City Council agenda. All right, we've talked about this third party, this PFM. PFM equals CYA, in my opinion, because you have the maps, you have the population, you have the demographic breakdown, because that's all we seem to care about in 2023 is what skin color everybody has. Are we ever going to move past? Can we get beyond this? This PFM will come in and say, okay, those things are correct, right? They're a third party. They're an outside group. They are doing that to say, yes, this is true. The study areas, and Dale goes on to write here, the biggest gain in population comes from a potential 26,000 people added in what the administration refers to as Map A, and you can see these if you go to 3 big things and link through to the story. It also includes Kings Branch, a neighborhood consisting of predominantly black population, which was included in the 2019 annexation attempt. It says Mappe would see the biggest change in total population, growing the city of Mobile from 184,000 residents to 213,132. Huntsville is Alabama's biggest city right now at 215,000. The city's overall black population would dip from where it is now at 53% to 50%. The white population would increase from 41% to 43%. The other part of this, too, remember we talked about this in redistricting in depth. It wasn't just the percentage of population demographically, it was voting age. So Dale goes on to say the black voting age population, an important distinction debated during the city's redistricting discussions, would drop under this plan from just less than 50% to almost 47%. The white voting age population would grow slightly from 44% to 47%. So it'd be equal. It'd be equal, right, in voting age population. And of course, you know, that's changing every day, right? Kids are turning 18 and old people. Yeah, I know in some parts of the country, dead people vote, but we're trying. Once they're dead, you shouldn't be voting, right? So that's happening every day. And so we go back to this discussion, and this discussion has gone on for, holy cow, the longest time, right, on annexation. And we've had annexations. We've had these gerrymandered districts out to grab Walmart and things like that, leaving neighborhoods in the lurch, moving around other neighborhoods to pull in, you know, this neighborhood because it's near a retail center. These maps, if you'll look at them, are less gerrymandered. Less, they seem to have more of a real shape versus like a long corridor getting to somewhere. The map B here, so we talked about map A, and you can, like I said, this is something you actually need to look at. They said the map B here, he said the biggest change from Map B to Map A is a reduction in the size of the area west of Cody Road. In Map B, the area under annexation consideration stops at Jeff Hamilton Road instead of continuing to Snow Road, as it does in Map A. As a result of the smaller area, the black majority in Mobile is not diluted as much. For Map B, the total black population drops from 53% to 51.1%. The total white population increases from 41% to 42%. And then there's a study area labeled Map C, as smaller than Map A and Map B, adds a total population of 18,000, bringing the city's population up to 205,109. Biggest difference, Dale writes here, between Maps A and Maps B and Map C appears to be the removal of the area west of Solly Road to Leroy Stevens Road that was part of the maps previously highlighted. All right, so I mean, this is something you're going to look at, and I think Dale will join me tomorrow on the show to talk about it. From the word I get, this is... We're closer than we've ever been to offering, and let me go back, if you're new to this, the city council will not decide to annex. What the city council will decide is to allow the right of referendum, the right of the people in those districts, be it Map A, Map B, Map C, whatever the zone is, it will give them the right to vote if they want to come into the city or not. So this, you know, this quite often gets lost in the discussion. The city council is not going to be able to like just say, "Oh, okay, y'all are all in. We've annexed you." No, you offer the vote, and then you tally the vote, and if people want to come in, then they vote to come in. So that's the, you know, that's how this system works. It's something that the folks that seem to follow this pretty closely tell me they see. They do believe that there will be the right of referendum. I don't know which map it's going to be, but it'll happen sometime this year. The financial considerations, Dale writes here, you know, we talk about that money. Says, Director Barber touted both immediate and long-term revenue benefits as a result of annexation. He also spoke about financial pressures that could be put on the city without growth. We've heard this discussion before. Okay, he goes in to say, currently the city of Mobile collects half of its normal sales tax rate, or 2.5% on the dollar, from retail sales in the 3-mile extended area extending past the city limits. The city is also allowed to collect business license fees in the police jurisdiction. Together, that translates to about $20 million per year in revenue from the police jurisdiction. If these areas get fed up waiting for Mobile to annex them and decide to incorporate or join another city like Sims, he said the city loses out on that revenue. However, annexation of those areas could bring in as much as $12 million in revenue over expenses after the 5-year moratorium on ad valorem taxes passes. So you got a couple of arguments here of just the tax dollars coming in. In addition, of course, we can talk about the grant money, as Mobile has gotten pretty savvy in getting grant money. we still have to, like, there's, I think the mayor was in here one time, and I forget the actual number, but said if Mobile, during the grant money and the ARPA money that was being paid out, if the city would have been over $200,000, how much more money would have come to the city? It was significant. I don't know. But the question is, should the people in these areas be given the right to vote to come in or not? Now, I think it's worthwhile. If it's going to cost the city money and be a drain, then of course not. Everything I have heard, now these are from people who are pro-annexation, is like I read to you in Dale's story right there, that it's a net positive in money to the city. So if you're in Mobile and you have more money, and one of the things that was pointed out too is those areas of Mobile, well, outside the Mobile city limits, are often newer neighborhoods, newer areas that need less infrastructure work like we're doing in the rest of the city. So maybe they're bringing in the tax revenue but not costing the city as much. All right, grab some of these texts here before we go to the break, and then we can grab some calls and texts on the other side. Does that map include Chingdary Road? It's a few roads west past King's Branch. I'm curious. My dad's house will be caught up in the annex. I will look at that during the break. You could also check those maps out. They're posted through the city's website. Also, if you go to landiatmobile.com, if you're a subscriber there, you can get it there. Isn't making annexation decisions based on the race of residents racist? I would think so, Terry, but it's like the thing to do, right? I mean, that's been this whole discussion. And I understand the politics. I mean, I'm not, unaware of the politics of this. But it, as a city, it holds Mobile back. And I know we're not the only city that's happened. It holds Mobile back. This discussion, since this radio station's been around and we've been having these annexation discussions, you can talk about revenue, you can talk about the PJ, you can talk about this street and the cutting here and the fire district, and this, and it all ends up coming down to race. Am I wrong? Let me know. 343-0106. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1222, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Talk about new things in my life. Actually, and there'll be... later on today, there'll be a picture coming up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. Show you two of the new things. So the new dog here. Maybe you've seen a few pictures out there on social media of the new dog and the new bicycle. The new bicycle. Right. So, and I say bicycle, it's a electric e-bike. I think that's what the cool kids call them. And it's a the one I'm riding. It's a Magnum Scout is the name of this name of the bike. And you'll see the picture of it. This thing is cool. It is a off-road electric bicycle. Now you can ride it. It kicks it. Like if you want to have just a little extra like kick in to help you. Okay, when you ride these things, y'all, to get an idea of how this e-bike works, you're riding it. But like say you're walking through the airport, right? And you hit the people mover track. You know, like you're walking, then you hit the people. You're still walking. I do. I mean, some people will just stand there. But when you hit the people mover thing, I walk. So you got your speed, but you got that extra speed from the conveyor belt that you're on. Kind of feels like that on these e-bikes. And I've seen them around for time, but they're really like, and this company, Magnum, has made really an awesome off-road bike. So that's where I spend most of my time, just in a truck or on a bicycle. I spend my time on dirt roads. That's what I like. And this is a bicycle that can handle it. Also, you can go into like the full electric mode. You don't even have to pedal at that point. Go up big hills. You can go, you travel long distances. I got this bike from Adventure Earth Bicycles. It's a friend of mine, Clint Jameson, known him for years, worked together for years. Adventure Earth Bicycles on right there on Government, kind of across from Ruth's Chris. I'll put some pictures up later. I went in, he said, man, my inventory is really pretty big. That's an understatement. They have over 400 bicycles and 50 of these e-bikes I'm talking about in stock. They got mountain bikes, comfort, hybrid bikes, road and triathlon bikes, the beach cruisers. They got the BMX if you want to take it that way. Remember back in the day, the BMX bikes. Also, they do repairs on all brands of bicycles and on e-bikes. They've been in business for 10 years at their current location at the corner of Airport and Little Flower in Midtown. And they, if you're looking for Fuji, of course, the oldest bike company in the world, or Jamis Bicycles, Miami Sun, just to name a few of them, e-bikes from 7 different manufacturers, including Magnum, like I have, Denago, Bulls e-bikes, Velotric, Day 6 Comfort e-bikes, all these in stock right now at Adventure Earth Bicycles. So, a friend of mine, long time, he does great work, he's a really cool guy. Go see Clint and the crew at Adventure Earth Bicycles. Go check him out online, look at these bicycles, and when you hop on, and he has, if you want to go like see what I'm talking about, they have demo bikes there and e-bikes, so you can take them for a ride there and you'll get a grin on your face. These things are really, really awesome. So if you're riding them in town, it's one thing, but if you're a hunter like me, this bike, and you go look at the picture, not only do I use it to road test, road trial my German Shorthair puppy, keep him in shape and calm down, it's also going to be a turkey hunting machine. Y'all check it out. We'll put the pictures up on the Facebook page here shortly, but go see my friend Clint Jamison at Adventure Earth Bicycles. Everything inside to get you outside. All right, 1226, go to the text line here. And by the way, like Supermom and others asking me about the maps, probably the biggest map, the easiest ones for my eyes to read, like I'm reading Dale Leisha's story, but another friend of mine, Brendan Kirby over at Fox 10, has his maps are bigger. So you can check those out on Fox 10's site, too, because people were asking, like, exactly where did the line. And Maximus says, gerrymandering at its finest. I live on the blue space, retail, and Walmart to the left and right of me. All they care about is money. And that's what's happened in the past, right? Those, and remember the big Walmart grab with that, when Mayor Sam Jones was in office? These maps here do have some carve-outs, but they do look like they take in way people too, not just retail locations on that. Hal says, never forget the string of pearls was supposed to be a net positive too. You're going to believe them again. All right, so that's fair. And Hal, I appreciate Hal's negativity, his constant negativity, because the string of pearls, I didn't believe them then. I questioned that, right? Remember, I got myself in so much trouble about questioning GulfQuest. I'm not even talking about on the air. Calls I got at my desk phone saying, you know, hey, quit being a pain in the butt and shut up. Of course, I didn't shut up. So I don't think the string of pearls, the string of pearls, though, was if you build it, they will come. Right, Hal? It was this thing like, hey, y'all, if we redo GMNO, we do all these things, that people will come. And it didn't work out that way. Annexing in parts to the city actually has, you have real numbers on it, right? Now, maybe you can say this, you know, if you build it, they will come will be the grant money. But the actual revenue, you can pull those numbers. You can say, here's, you know, here's what if we had this many people and these many businesses inside the city proper, here's what the revenue would be. So I don't think it's as much as if you build it, they will come as a string of pearls. The Real Sam says, let's see, will there be another Ask the Sheriff? And if so, what day of the month is it? And it would also still be Sam as a sheriff or the new sheriff. Okay, so, yeah, I was talking to new sheriff, Paul Birch, longtime part of the sheriff's department, but Paul Birch now officially sheriff of Mobile County. He will be joining me. I don't know, Sam, what day of the week, what day of the month it'll be. You know, we used to do Sheriff Cochran's second Tuesday of the month. It may stay there or move some, but I will let you know. And yeah, former sheriff Sam Cochran also always has a open invite on this show. Don's saying, oh, you can get your deer stand a lot quieter that way, too. Absolutely. That bicycle, I tell you what, though, Don, I've been riding it for like 2 days, and I'm pretty utilitarian. I like this thing fixes this problem. This thing does this thing. I've been accused by many women and others of being just a utilitarian person. Well, this bicycle not only is utilitarian for that stuff, it's fun. And I'm 50, and I had a great, great, great time riding it. And when you got a puppy that needs to run about a mile and a half a day to be anything less than the Tasmanian devil, it's good. Yeah, go Google them. Check out the website. Believe me, these bicycles also have cushy seats and good shocks, because I'm not one for riding a, you know, a hardwood seat down a bumpy hillside. So check them out. It's Adventure Earth Bicycles. My buddy Clint Jemison. Check them out. All right, coming right back. Justin Bogey from 1819 News joins me.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, a whole bunch of texts to get to. We'll get to these maybe later on in the hour. I do what Terry said, talk about GSPs. I do what I don't know why I feel compelled to do this, but I do. Because I like the people that have, okay, Terry says German short hair, GSPs are good dogs. Not for the lazy owner, though. We use GSPs for explosive detection, right? It's because, Terry, they are German dogs, and you can use them for everything. I have a whole running joke about that, but not my first. I guess that's the flag I want to put down. Not my first German short hair. I have been, my last one died. Hesse died about 4 years ago, and so I've been without a short hair for 4 years, and it's, you know, I had her for 12 years, and so yeah, it's been I've been doing this thing a long time. But let me tell you, you could easily forget about the energy of puppies, and even being ready for German short hairs, you can be surprised. They got lots of energy, and I'm getting older. All right, let's check in with Justin Bogey from 1819news.com. Lots to talk about with him. Hey, Justin.
Hey, Sean, how's it going?
It's good. I got a puppy, but, you know, other than that, it's...
Yeah, I went through training, too, in an 800-square-foot apartment, so I know the pain.
In an apartment? So, oh, my gosh.
In D.C.
So what kind of dogs did you have?
We have a golden doodle and then a little Bichon mixed dog that's very stubborn and getting old.
Well, the Bichon can chill out and hold furniture down, but the golden doodles and stuff, they got to go do stuff, man. They got stuff they got to go do.
Yeah.
They don't know what it is, but they got to go do it now. Let's go. This is a conversation we had last week, and I want to reinforce it from a conversation I had yesterday with State Senator Arthur Orr, that it sounds to me like they really don't know what they're going to, at least what they're telling us is they really don't know what they're going to do with all this extra money in Montgomery. Is that, should I believe that? Or Justin, give me some idea of what you think the real story is going into session.
Well, maybe I'm a little more cynical than you. Yeah, you know, I think they probably have something in the back of their mind that they want to do with it. Last year, we saw a big boost to the education budget with surplus funding. You know, what we're hearing about in terms of tax cuts is maybe a limited tax rebate, $200 to $500, depending on if you're single or married. But yeah, you know, I think they probably have some ideas. We're only 2 months away from the session, so they're starting to work what they're going to do with it.
Okay, so when we talk about rebate, right, and then maybe $200 to, and then you got to ask the question, okay, if it's going to be $200, is that for people that had a net tax implication, every Alabamian, dependents, you know, who, I mean, you would say logically it would be the people that paid the taxes, but, you know,
yeah,
I mean,
that's,
but it's
my guess, everyone who filed a return.
But, you know, do they have to have had a tax implication of $200, more than $200, you know, or do you go through and like just say, well, somebody filed the taxes, but they ended up getting more money back or something like that?
Yeah, and we really don't have any indication right now. You know, it sounds like it would be every taxpayer, but it's just too soon to tell on that. But that's what they seem to be acquiescing around, which is interesting. You know, we're in a situation where we have the largest surplus in history, $3 billion, and Mississippi last week, their Center for Public Policy put out a column that basically explained why rebates are not as effective as real tax cuts. And this comes on the heels of Mississippi passing the biggest tax cut in state history last year, and they're still vowing to do more. They're vowing to completely eliminate personal income taxes. So, you know, I wish we were having those conversations here and really at least being open to the possibility and having a debate about it instead of just settling on one-time rebates.
Yeah, and I'm probably moderate on this in the fact that I do worry about making sure, and you can kind of talk about this, that we have money held back. I think that's actually conservative as well. I mean, running government lean, but having, you know, like getting the other $60 million back into the rainy day fund and those kind of things to have that money, mm-hmm. so we don't have a, same way in your personal life, you have the emergency fund, right, that you hold on to. You don't spend that. It's for things that are unseen coming up. So I want that to happen. At the same time, in a conversation I had with Senator Orr, if we could, and I don't know all the numbers here, but, you know, I said, if, like you and I talked about last time, go after this, some reduction of the state's portion of the grocery tax and eliminating some or all of it. And he talked about how much money that is and the ETF. I just wonder if there's enough money out there, Justin, to put like another fund back, right? So we hold this money back. And if the receipts from grocery sales, you know, let's say we move that tax back to from 4% to 2%. Okay, for example, and we take 2% out. Mm-hmm. Is there enough money to hold back and say, hey, this fund can fill in the difference of that 2% if we get in a situation where we need it? You see what I'm saying? So we get.
Yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah, and if you were to do a proposal like that, you're talking probably $300 million. But again, to say that's about a $3 billion revenue surplus right now. You know, really the key here, is, I think, is spending. And Alabama's government has expanded spending at a faster rate than New York or California the last few years. It's about 36%. And what the Mississippi Center for Public Policy was basically proposing, they weren't saying don't spend any more money. They weren't saying freeze spending. They were basically saying hold spending at a rate of inflation and population growth. And in Mississippi, they would still be able to afford about $800 million in tax cuts.
Oh, wow.
While expanding government by about 7.5%. So really it comes down to spending and, you know, how much more money do we want to put into government versus how much do we want to give back to the people of Alabama? So you know, I think that's really what it comes down to. Reserve funds, you know, if you really think that we're heading towards a recession and things are going to get bad, then that would certainly be an option. But we already have several reserve accounts that are basically chock full right now of hundreds of millions of dollars that would be available this year or next year if we found ourselves in a recession. So, you know, I would question if we really need another reserve fund right now.
Yeah, it's this question of, I mean, not saying that let's say we get $200 per taxpayer. That's not insignificant. That's some money. But for the benefit going forward, a long-term change in tax policy to me seems much better. And like we talked about last week too, my obsession with this, and it's lost on people before you text and say, well, people with food stamps and EBT don't pay I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about the people that don't receive government benefits, but dang it, every month is a challenge to feed themselves and their family and all that. To give those people some liberty. I mean, it affects everybody gets the same tax cut, but it affects those people the most. And those people are doing what we want folks to do. They're working. They're not taking public assistance. They're trying to do right. We can help those people.
Right. And you're exactly right. And it doesn't just affect, you know, the low income people who are receiving government benefits to pay for groceries. I mean, it affects everyone, middle class and even, you know, higher class. It's definitely making a difference on their bottom line. And, you know, while rebates would be my preferred method, I think they're absolutely better than doing nothing. But something I was talking to Jeff Ford about this morning, it's actually kind of an interesting point. If you give a rebate, does that kind of, is that victory for politicians, whatever, and does that rule out the possibility of tax reform for several years, which I think is a legitimate concern. But given the size of the surplus and the record amount of revenue coming into the state, you know, I just think you have to do something. But again, a permanent tax cut, even if it's the grocery tax where you may only see, you know, a few dollars every time you go to the store, that certainly adds up over the course of a year and several years. So it's not insignificant.
No, it is not. Just joining us, talking to Justin Bogey from 1819news.com. Speaking of money, big money, let's go to Washington. You have a piece posted up this week, how Washington's looming debt limit fight could impact you. Okay. Now, we like to talk about their, you know, kicking the can down the road, and now we're, you know, the can's finally stopped moving. McCarthy's going to hold their feet to the fire. The Democrats are going to push back. Justin, what does this mean for, like, the Sullivan House?
Yeah, well, you know, I think this is going to be fascinating, first of all, because Republicans kind of seem more dug in on this, at least House Republicans, than they usually are. And we kind of come up on this deadline every 18 months or 2 years, but there really seems to be more drama associated with it this time. So we have now officially hit the debt limit. And what that basically means is the Treasury can't borrow any more money to pay existing payments to people, to companies, to whatever the case may be. So they're going to go into a stage where they prioritize payments so we don't default on our debt. We've never defaulted on our debt before, but anyways, it can cause a lot of chaos, I would say. The stock market, I don't know if it's reacting to that today, but it's down. But it can certainly react to a crisis, especially if we get closer to a default date. It took its toll on people's retirement plans a decade or so ago. So we really do go through this a lot, and it causes chaos. It can lead to higher unemployment. It can lead to higher borrowing, meaning mortgage and car payments and all of those kind of things go up. So it can absolutely our bottom lines as well.
Now, yeah, and you're talking about more borrowing, too. I don't know if anybody's noticed, but it costs more to borrow these days. So not only are we borrowing more money, it is costing a higher interest rate for we the people, right?
Yeah, you know, and I was actually looking at this out of curiosity this morning, but, you know, I bought a house about 2.5-3 years ago, and I think we paid, you know, 2.25% right. interest rate or something pretty low, and it actually went a lot lower after that. And then today it's up around 7%. And if you're talking about a 30-year loan, that's a whole lot of money over the course of a loan. So whether you see an immediate impact or not, and you will see some sort of immediate impact from higher interest rates, obviously, but the long-term toll of it is just really amazing.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, now were we living in a kind of, you know, when you had those two-something rates? And yes, it was pretty awesome. And like you said, they went lower, and it's not 14-15% that my parents used to talk about, but yeah, you slow everything down. I don't know. The Fed obviously, you know, is using this to slow down inflation. The talking heads out of Washington tell me that the inflation is slowing down. I saw eggs for $7-something the other day. I don't know that it is working. I mean, how much of
we're
this is
not yeah. feeling it yet?
Yeah, I mean, if they tell me inflation is slowing down, but maybe it is in some sector or whatever, but not like the grocery store or, you know, other mortgage rates or things that affect average Alabamians.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all seeing it. But again, you know, like we were just saying with Alabama and tax cuts, this kind of all goes back to federal spending. Federal spending, the national debt has about doubled in the last 10 years or so. We had over a $3 trillion deficit back in 2020. You know, trillion-dollar deficits were unheard of until a few years ago, and now it's just become a common and accepted thing that's going to go on and on. So I do think Republicans are right to hold their feet to the fire and say we're going to have spending cuts if we want to raise the debt limit. But, you know, in the past, we've spent about I think it was 2011 was the last time that that's what they actually did. They exchanged spending cuts in return for a debt limit increase. So not a great track record there. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. But again, it could really have an impact on us. Eventually, this federal debt bill is going to come due. Somebody's going to have to pay for it. Well, theoretically, if you prescribe to modern monetary theory, maybe not. But, you know, we're all going to see the cost of this. We're all going to be paying higher taxes. Our children, grandchildren, et cetera, will be paying higher taxes if we don't get the problem under control and like you said, stop kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, I mean, y'all, like Justin said, it's close to being $100,000 in federal debt for every American. And it's not just every taxpayer, every American.
Every American.
You know, and so while we go to student, you know, talking about the student loan, you know, what President Biden tried to do with the student loan bailout and all that, saying, well, this is, you know, this is handcuffing and slowing these people down in their careers going forward, which I actually agree with some of that. I don't think it's the job of government, though. So if that's true, can't we make that argument back against the Democrats and say, so is $100,000 in federal debt for every American? You know, I mean, you got this scenario out there. Everybody's who's born today is born with $100,000 debt and gets nothing for it other than being an American.
Right. And the common refrain we're hearing from Democrats on this is that they're not going to negotiate. We can't hold the nation's credit rating and hostage over spending cuts and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's sometimes it may not be a great timing for it or whatever, however you want to look at it. But sometimes it takes a point like this and it to really make that change happen. And if not now, then when is my question. You know, we can't afford to go down the same path and keep having these battles every 18 months or 2 years. There really needs to be policy change in Washington. If this is an opportunity to make that happen, then again, I think Republicans should stand strong on that.
There we go. Justin Boakye, 1819news.com. Tell folks, if they have not heard of y'all, what you do, what you about.
Sure. It's just we're about providing straight news without a slant. Good conservative news that people can come and get their information from.
Very good. Justin, appreciate it. We'll talk again next week.
Thank you.
All right. There he goes. Justin Bogey, 1819news.com. And we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, those of y'all, I mean, a lot of text here about the bicycle and the short hair. You can see pictures of both on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. People asking, could you ride those e-bikes on streets and sidewalks? Yes, you can. And off-road, the one I have has a big off-road tires on it. Yeah, check those out. Accessories, people are asking about. Yeah, well, go get with Clint over at Adventure Earth Bicycles. He's got the bicycles and also get the accessories. I'm going to put panniers on mine so I can haul stuff around. It's got like a place where you can put stuff in the back, but I also want to do the panniers. Does it put a rifle saddle on there? Probably. Yeah, you could probably do that. All right. Back to the annexation talk, too. So, you know, Maximus had talked about the kind of gerrymandered area around his house. I've seen several other people talking about where those lines are. Let's see. Alan says, first, I don't have a horse in this race. I live in Grand Bay. West Mobile residents are hoping to avoid the city of Mobile and associated problems therein. Without inserting my own opinions, the info available from Neighborhood Scout should be sufficient to direct new residents to our community away from the city itself. West Mobile would be better off incorporating or joining Sims in order to keep tax dollars in their community. Mayor Stimson wants more money. West Mobile will probably be annexed into the city of Mobile and fund the urban decay therein. David says, no more state tax cuts until our Mobile River Bridge is paid for. So, oh, you think, but they can't do that. I don't think they can take that. I think they could just turn that money around. Oh, come on. There's too many people in North Alabama that want it. Pat says, so $200 checks instead of $1,000 plus, averaging $200 a week grocery bill a year. The government wouldn't go for that, Sean. Well, Pat, you're probably right. But it doesn't mean I'm going to stop pushing for this grocery tax thing. I think it's, and yes, does it bring up the conversation of where else the revenue would come from? Sure, it does. Sure, it does. But when you, it's just, to me, it's a real special tax because you can remove that. Everybody gets the same tax break. It's not like carved out for this person or that person. It's carved out for everybody, but it impacts people who are doing right, trying to make a living, and are on the edge. It helps them the most. All right, grab a quick call here before we go to the news. Cliff is up next. Hey, Cliff. Hello, Cliff. There's something with Cliff. I think we lost Cliff yesterday, didn't we? I don't know what's going on with that. This texter says the current price of eggs changes the context of what's considered chicken feed. That's true. That's funny. This next one says inflation is down only means the rate of increase in cost is lower. Costs aren't lower. Decrease in cost requires deflation. Yeah, so there you go. But that's the Fed policy, right? The Fed is, necessarily, as they like to say, the Fed necessarily is trying to slow down the economy, slow down wage growth, slow down prices by raising interest rates. Now, they have slowed down themselves from where they were a couple months ago, right? They've started to moderate some in the increases, but the inflation's there. The inflation's there. And it takes, if I remember correctly, it takes a while for that to come back down, for the deflation to happen. And yeah, were we in a pretty incredible place? Was it a sugar high when you had mortgage rates in the 1.8 range, 2.5? I mean, I remember seeing it. I remember buying a house, and it was like at 5.3 or something. And me saying something to my parents, they're like, you have no idea how good that is. And they explained what it was like in the 80s. And then, heck, I didn't have it at 5.3 that I, you start getting the packets to say, hey, you can refi for less. And so I refined for less and all that. So those days were good. Those days were great. I don't know where the real point. Do we ever go back to those days of 1.8 or something? I don't know, 2.3. But right now at 5, 6, 7, 8, going up, obviously it makes a big difference. And it'll put put pressure on rent prices, too, for sure. All right, I will talk to y'all tomorrow. A special edition of What's Working with Cam Marston coming your way next. And tonight, everything, Paul Feinbaum will come on afterwards. So, but from 1 to 2, my man Cam and What's Working next on FM Talk 106.5.